Well, we have such a special treat for you. I want to introduce to you Peter Mutabazi. And I said that name absolutely perfectly, just so everyone knows. If he says it different, he got it wrong. No, not really. But listen, he's got such a great story, a great testimony, and he's, I believe, one of the reasons that we are associated with Beyond Uganda, which many of you are even more a special part of if you've sponsored a child or bought a well. And so we're very thankful for him. He had an open date for us to have him today, and we're very honored to have him here. He's one of those guys to me that after you meet him, you get this feeling that you've been best friends for years. Actually, Peter, that's how I felt when I met you. I felt like we had known each other for a long time. So if you would, please welcome Peter Mutabazi.
Thank you.
Are you on?
I think so, right?
I told everybody you've got till 2 o'clock.
Well, that's in Africa. They can go for hours and hours. Why? Because Sunday is a special day that they really get to worship the Lord, and they're not interrupted by time. We tell Americans, you have the clock, we have the time, right? So you have the clock, you have the watch, we have the time. Well, my name is Peter Mutabazi, and I want to warn you, I'm from Uganda. My dad is from Uganda. My dad is from Rwanda, and my mom is from Uganda, but born and raised in Uganda. Well, I speak 7 languages, and English is my 4th language. So I might sound rude, and here's what you can do. You can throw your iPhone at me, and I'll send it to Africa as soon as I leave, right? But truly a joy on behalf of my family and on behalf of you Beyond Uganda. We really, really want to thank you for believing in us, for giving us a glimpse of hope, especially with your Pastor Jeff, for loving us and for doing the best he can to truly change the lives of little ones in Uganda. So I took a group of people to Uganda 10 years ago. While we are in the field talking, one of the ladies, Kapiola, she said, I would like to do more here. And her daughter said, I think we can do more beyond what we journeyed here for. And so they came back and created Beyond Uganda. That is 10 years ago. And it's really amazing to see how God is using them and what they're doing for kids and families in Uganda. And as I get to share my story, I want you to go back to Uganda. I'm a typical man that was raised and went through the same challenges as the kids you're supporting today for the water that you've been providing for them. So as you listen to me, I want you to go to Uganda for a little while for the kids and families that you're truly supporting. So I went to school here in the United States. So North Carolina is my home and it's my community. And actually, I just became a U.S. citizen 3 years ago. So finally, I can vote. The one thing I could not do, so finally, I can vote, and I'm truly excited. So this is my home, and this is where I belong, and this is my country in every shape, form you could imagine. But when I came to the United States first, I really struggled with my faith. When I walked in and we went to eat that day, I saw how much food I was given and how much was thrown away after. And I began to ask God, like, if you love us, you must love us differently. If you care for us, you must care to us differently. Here's why. I come from a country, or I come from a village, where most kids died before the age of 2. Why? For the lack of a bowl of beans. I did not have a name until when I was 2 years old. Why? Because my mother was afraid that I would die before the age of 2. Why? For every 100 children were born in my village, 60 would die before the age of 2. If you're malnourished, you haven't eaten for days, and you get malaria, it takes about 12 to 24 hours to take your life. So I've lost cousins and nieces for lack of beans. And so when I'm here, and I could see so much thrown away, and I questioned God, do you love us the same way? That others can have so much to throw away, and others can die for having sold nothing. And I really struggled understanding how he loves us. But as I was reading through the scriptures, especially Psalm 139, I looked at David. We all know David had 300 wives. I don't know how you can have 300 wives. I have zero. He had everything he could talk about in Psalm 139. But I like how he approached it. He says, I am so amazed that you know when I stretch, you know when I lie down, you know when I go to somewhere, that there's no place I can hide from you, that you know me so well. And I love what he says in 14, for you're fearfully and wonderfully made. And I know the kids in Uganda, they go fetch water every other day. I know the kids in Uganda, they go to sleep. I know the kids in Uganda, that he knows them, even when they go to bed with no food, that he truly knows who they are. And that really helped me to know that God loves no matter what you have, no matter what you don't have, that he loves us the same way because he created us each uniquely in our mother's womb. And that helped me to let go of what we have. Sometimes we see what we have and want to quit. That's how God loves us. But no, David looked at how he made him, that God knew him that way. And also, I visited families, and I noticed there were extra bedrooms, empty bedrooms. And I asked, why are empty bedrooms? Why do you have empty bedrooms? Here's why. 99.9 of people in my village live in a house as big as your car garage. And there will be between 6 to 16 members of the family that live in that space. And as much as I saw, I said, why are they empty? Well, I began to ask myself, that God, if you ever give me a house, if you ever give me a bedroom, I would like to do something. But also before I could point a finger to Americans, I pointed a finger to myself. That of all millions and millions of kids in Uganda, I had the opportunity to come and study and live in the United States. So for me, Luke 12:48 began to really challenge me. Luke 12:48 says, from everyone who has been given much, much will be demanded. And from the one who has been entrusted with much, much more will be asked. And I knew he'd given me so much, as you get to hear my story. And I could not just not see it as much as I could without doing something. So here's what I did. I walked in the foster care system. I said, hey, I would like to mentor teenagers. Is there a way you could allow me to mentor teenagers? Here's why I went towards the teenagers. Well, I had traveled over the world and I had never seen a black person adapting from Uganda or from Ethiopia or from China. They were all white. They were all married. So I knew there's no way I can do that. So I went to Ethiopia and I said, what if I want to adapt? Is that possible? They said, well, you have to come from America or European or a single female, not man. You cannot adapt. So I thought there's no way I could do that. So that's why I went to the foster care system to say, would you allow me to mentor? So this is what the lady said. Said, have you ever thought of being a foster dad? I was like, well, I'm single. I'm not sure I can. Well, she said, you can foster. And that day I signed up to leave Luke 12:48. To whom much is given, much is required. And so I became a foster dad. Guess from where? From Oklahoma. So I moved to Oklahoma so I can be a foster dad, single dad. And I've had 28 children. Right now I have 6, but I would like to show you some of my family so you can see what they look like. There is my family. Well, don't say ah, because they are crazy living with them. And you can see, before you go to the next one, you can see I thought I should have dogs too. So I have dogs. One is called Simba, the other one is called Rafiki. Why? Because all my kids are white. I thought I need something African, you know, in my home. So at least the dogs have African names, you know. So that's my family. Next. That's my 5-year-old. Every time I put him in bed, he says, Papa, thank you for putting me to bed. But what he's saying many times, I didn't know who put me to bed. Next. I've always had boys. This time I have a girl because the other is a brother. And I love her so much. I used to be the boss of the house, but as soon as she walked in, I lost it all. She's the boss of the house. She paints my nails, sometimes twice a day. She thinks I have blonde hair, so imaginably she works on my hair, and I have single hair, no hair. But she finds a way of how to truly help me sit, listen, and be tender. And every time I pick her from school, she says, "Papa, thank you for coming to get me." But what she's saying, many times, I didn't know who would come and get me from school. Next picture. Well, I have an 18-year-old. During COVID, they said, "This boy, he's 17, so he's about to age out. Would you take him in for just 12 months so he can age out?" I said, "Absolutely, 12 months I can do." So he came. And then 3 or 4 weeks in with us, he said, "Mr. Peter, I want to talk to you, and it's really serious." When a foster kid tells you it's serious, you know, what did he do this time? But he sat with me. He said, "I have been in more than 12 homes, and each one of them promised to adopt me. But no one did. They adopted my siblings, but no one ever wanted me. Would you consider adopting me as your son?" So he's now 18, and he's my son, Zay. Next picture. This one. As foster parents, we get to be respites. Don't believe in respite because they come and they never go. Respite is when they give you a kid to be there for a weekend or when the parents have to travel and then you have to keep them. So this one, I got a phone call at 3 in the morning that he needed a place to stay for just the weekend. And I said, "Absolutely no." Why? Because I had lost the 2 siblings that had gone home. And I was not mad, but I just needed time to heal. I've been told to be a foster dad, but I was never told how to say goodbye. And so I was hurting. I said, I can't do it, but would you give me 6 months to heal? Then I will take in. Well, this is Monday. On Friday, that's when I get a phone call. And I'm like, "Social worker, 4 days is not 6 months." But she said, "This little boy is at the hospital. He only needs only Saturday, Sunday, and I'll pick him up on Monday." And I said, you can come, but don't tell me anything about him. And make sure you pick him up by Monday at 10. If you don't, he'll be outside waiting for you." And she said, "Yes." And so he came in at 3 in the morning. And I told him, "My name is Peter Mutabazi, but just call me Mr. Peter." And he looks at me and said, "But can I call you my dad?" Well, I didn't say that. I used the word H-E-L-L. No. That's what I said. No. And then he looked back at me and said, "But I'm 11. And I was told since I'm 11, I can choose my father should be." And I still said, "No, you're leaving on Monday. There's no need for you to call me dad." So they come to pick him on Monday. And after I signed the paperwork, now I was like, "So why was he left at the hospital?" Well, this is what I heard. And 1 year and a half, he came in the foster care system. Here in Oklahoma. He was adopted by the family that took him in at 4. That family had dropped him at the hospital and they never said goodbye or never said, gave him the reason why they didn't want him anymore. And they had gone to the county and signed off their parental rights. And I looked at the little boy and I thought, what next? What is going to happen? And then I looked at the social worker. I said, "You know, he already knows that I'll be his dad. So just give me the paperwork. Just give me." So he became my official son 2 years ago. And he's 16 years old. Anthony Mutabazi from here in Oklahoma. And he's truly been a joy. And as you listen, you might wonder, how do you come from Africa? You're a single man. You adopt these kids, and you foster 28. And by the way, what I didn't tell you, yesterday I got a phone call that I am getting a 12-month baby. That's what I said. Oh, no. Why? Because she's the sibling of my 6 and 7-year-old sister. And I'm going through adoption, so I can't leave her by herself. And I have to bring her in. So as I came in, I was signing, talking to God. I'm saying goodbye to sleep. There's no more sleeping in my home. But as you listen, you might say, how do you do it? How do you do it? Here's why, I come to be a false friend. I want to show you two pictures that represent of where I come from. So the next picture is, this is a typical of what I would look like. So these kids are from my village. No shoes. They have never washed their clothes. That was me many, many years ago. Next picture. You have grocery stores. This is how we go to shop for food. If you grow potatoes, you go and sell potatoes so you can have salt. So that is a typical place that would go to find food to eat. Well, I grew up in a poor of the poorest you could think of. Grew up in a home where no one ever told me that there's a hope for me at all. Think about, if a mother can't feed you for a night, how does she tell you there's tomorrow? And that's the kids of Beyond Uganda is helping. The kids some of you sponsor. I grew up in a place where I had to go fetch water 3 to 4 miles away, one way. 3 hours, three back, twice a day. Tell me, how would you ever be a kid or think that there was a future for you? Grew up in a home where I had beans and potatoes, and we couldn't have both. We'd keep one for the next day. We couldn't eat every day. I had one different meal on Christmas, chicken. So for me, I grew up knowing Christmas was about chicken because it was the only time I had a different meal. And then Easter, I grew up in a Roman Catholic family. At the end of Lent, that's when we'd have beef. So those are the only 2 days in my life I had a different meal. I had one pair of clothes for Monday to Saturday and one pair of clothes for Sunday. So tell me, how do you dream that there's a future for you? And not just my family, but everyone around us was poor as the kids of Beyond Uganda. As we're here, some of them are fetching water miles and miles away. And some are using the water wells that you give them. In that village you're helping, there's more than 1,000 kids. But Beyond Uganda can only help a few. And that was me as a little boy. At the age of 4, I began to realize that not only were poor, but I had the most abusive father you could think of. So for me, I have poverty outside, and then I have my own father in my own home. So there was no place to hide. No place. If you told me to dream, for me, I wished I did not see the next day, because today was hard enough that I didn't want to see the next day. Here's the other ugly part. I'm the oldest of 5. So every abuse that came to me came to my mother as well. And my mother most of the time got the beatings because she was trying to advocate for us, especially me. Every time she said, could you help Peter go to school at least for 1 year? She got the beating because she was trying to advocate for me. Some nights where she said, the kids haven't eaten for days. Would you provide a meal for them? But she got the beating because she was trying to ask for a meal for us. And as a 5-year-old, 6-year-old, you feel guilty that your mother is being punished because of your needs. And I hated that. That I could not protect my own mom because my needs got her in trouble. Tell me, how do you dream? How do you hope for tomorrow? How do you want even to get there? That was me as a little boy in Uganda. At age of 10, I thought, I know my father is going to kill me, but why should I let him? I'd rather die in the hands of a stranger. Do you know what I did? I went to the bus station. I had never been 20 miles away from my village. And I went to the bus station and I asked, of all these buses, which one goes the farthest? Which one goes the farthest? And the lady said, that one. And I got on that bus and I ran away. I didn't know where I was going, but I just wanted to die in the hands of someone else. But also I wanted to make sure that he would never get to see my dead body. So the farther he could go, the invisible I'll be. Well, I ended up in Kampala, which is 500 kilometers away from my village. And quickly I became a street kid. That's all I knew. That's what I became. There were more than other 1,000 kids on the streets of Kampala, and I knew how to survive. And I became the garbage boy. The abuse at home was harder. The abuse in the streets was 100 times. But there was a difference. These were strangers. I didn't know. I never seen them before. So it didn't mean much as my own father's abuse. And that became my life. I was a garbage. I was a kid who never amounted to anything. These are things I had from my father. You never amount to anything. You're nobody. I wish you were never born so I don't have to feed you. That's what I had every day of my life. As a street kid, the same. I was a garbage boy, the trash. That sometimes someone, rather than give you food by hand, they would rather throw it somewhere. And you go get it. And because they're animals, dogs like needed the same food, that we had to fight for it. So to me, I was treated more like a stray animal every day of my life. We learned how to steal. It was easy to steal while we're helping. So one day, I'd been on the streets for 4 years. One day I saw someone wearing glasses and khakis. To us, that meant they can afford food. And so I followed him. As he was buying food, I followed him and followed him. And as soon as he bought the bananas, I said, I'm carrying these to your car. Where's your car? And he said, can you put my stuff down? What is your name? That shook me and that scared me. Here's why. I'd been on the streets for more than 4 years. No human being had ever asked me what my name was. And he's a stranger who wants to know, you thief, what is your name? Here's the tears that come to me. That's for you, what you're doing for Beyond Uganda, for those kids. You've never been to Uganda, but you want to know by their names. You want to know who they are. You want to make sure they don't walk miles and miles away so they can get water nearby. And you want to know who they are. That's the difference you're making to those kids and moms and their grandparents. To me, him asking my name, it reminded me of who my mother was. Wait a minute. You want to know my name? You want to know my name? I'm a thief, dirty little boy. You want to know me? Why? And he gave me something to eat and he left. Next week, I saw him again. He called me by my name and he gave me something to eat. Third week, fourth week, I count on you. What time he comes, what he drives, where he parks his car. I'll be waiting on Monday between 5 and 7. That day, I didn't have to steal, but also someone would recognize me as a human being because I always thought I was less of a human being. That's what I smelt. That's what I looked like. Less of a human being. And so he fed me for 1.5 years. And one day he said, Peter, if you have an opportunity to go to school, would you love to go to school? And literally I said, this guy, he's the most useless human being ever. Here's why I thought he was crazy. Think about all you've been told, you're garbage. All you've been treated as is you're more like a stray dog. And someone says, would you like to go to school? It's like, don't you see what I come from, what I look like, what I smell like? It's like me telling you guys, they're sending people to the moon. Anyone wants to go? Anyone wants to go to the moon? You laughed. Why? Because none of you goes to bed thinking, man, I wish one day I could go to the moon. For me as a kid, that's what it felt like. Going to school was far-fetched for me that I deserved to go to school. And that's what you're doing for kids in Uganda, with Beyond Uganda, by giving them an opportunity to go to school, a place they never dreamt they could. I said, no. But this time, next time he asked, he changed the language. He said, if you go to school, there'll be lunch, dinner, and breakfast. I was like, okay, where? Because all I had was food, and I wanted to know, is there really food? I lived in the sewer. I never taken a shower, only when it rains, maybe. Food was all I could think about. Food. So I went because of food. And I got to school, there was lunch, and I waited for dinner. And then I waited and waited. The more I waited, the more food kept coming. And then my behaviors changed because I did not want to miss that food. My instinct was to hit somebody or steal whatever I found. But I could not take it because that food, I didn't want to miss that food. And along the way, I found out like, not only was I just surviving kid, that I was smart, that I was beginning to do well in class. Why? Every time I got a D, my teachers would say, Peter, you are so smart. And the more kind words I had from them and from this family, they took me in their home. The more I got to see how a father treats his kids. There are two things they did for me that shook my brain. When they invited me to their home, they asked me to sit on the table. I'd never sat. I'd never seen a dad sit with their families. At home, we had to eat before he came, but just so we can hide. So him wanting me to sit on the table, I thought they're going to harm me or they're going to fight. So I said, I'd rather sit at the exit door, because that's what I thought dads do. But they pulled a chair and said, it's okay, you can sit. And I sat. And I waited for anyone to harm someone and never came. And that made me want to dream to be a dad like him. That's how he changed my world. It's not what he told me. It's really what he introduced me to that changed my life. For those kids in Uganda, you're sponsoring. When you write, they get to see someone in Oklahoma that doesn't look like me, that can love me and want the best for me. They want to know why. And the more they get to know you love the Lord, the more they get to see, oh, I see. I want that as well. So he put me in school and changed my life. But as he was driving me to school, I asked him, why me? Why? There are more than 2,000 kids on the streets of Kampala. Why me? He said, I just want to be faithful. I did not understand what that meant. I just want to be faithful. The same as you here, that you have helped kids in Uganda, not because you know them, but because you said, we want to be faithful. That's how you're changing lives of kids in Uganda. Here's what happened because he was faithful. I was able to go to school. Not only did I go to school, I went to high school. I went to university in Uganda. And then I got a scholarship to go study in England. And also I got a scholarship to come and study here in the United States. Through the kindness of one strange man that saw a street kid smelt trying to steal from him. But he didn't see a thief, but he saw a kid with potential and changed my life. Because he was faithful, my entire family have changed their lives as well. I'm the oldest of five. They've all gone through university. Not because we could do it, but I think he set an example for me that my siblings get to see. If Peter can do it, we can do it as well. And that's what you're doing for the kids in Uganda. That you help one. I come from a culture where it's men, women, children. But when you help that little girl, the father begins to change. Wait a minute. If a stranger can see the best in my daughter, I should do the same. That you're breaking the cycle on how others treat others. Because he was faithful, he's able to help me learn how to forgive. Especially my dad. I want to read you in Genesis. One thing that he taught me, every time I wanted to give up, he would say, tell me the life of Joseph. This is what he says. Do not be afraid. Hold on, 20, where are you? I'm getting old, I can't see. As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result, to preserve many alive. In other words, he says, for what you meant for evil, God has used it to save lives of others. And he's helped me understand that, hey, my past is ugly. I would never wish any child to go through, but I can use it as a platform to change life for me and for others. To see it as an opportunity to stand on and do the best I can for others, but also to forgive my dad in so many ways. That's how he changed my life. Here's the coolest thing he's taught me too as well. He's taught me what our father ought to be. Yes, I'm a foster dad, and I would like to foster as many as I could. It's my calling for now to foster, adopt, and advocate for kids in foster care. Why? Because this stranger taught me what our father ought to be. I didn't know what our father ought to be. My father, all he did, he was treating us like we're nobodies. But this man treated us that we're nobles. He showed me that. He walked with me that. And that's why I'm a dad. To kids who don't look like me. But I can love them because he showed me that. He didn't know where I came from. We spoke different language. But he loved me anyway. In every way, shape you could imagine. And that's why I'm a dad. That's why I love to help the most vulnerable. Because he helped me as a vulnerable little boy. His family used words that I'd never seen before, had before, that really changed my life. And I'll read for you some of them. He said, "Peter, you belong. I never felt I belonged anywhere. But he said, you belong to a family. Most of our foster kids, they never feel they belong. They move from family to family and try to teach them that they belong. He's key. Because he was faithful and he taught me, he said, Peter, you matter. I didn't know what that meant. Here's what he did one day. In Africa, most people don't have cars. A few that have cars, usually the owner drives the husband and the wife sits on the next and the kids in the middle and the rest of us in the back. Pickup truck. But his wife wasn't there that day. And he said, Peter, could you sit there? And I looked in his eyes. I said, I do not deserve to sit in your wife's seat. And this is what he said. He said, Peter, you matter to us. To this day, I remember what day, what he was dressed when he mentioned those words. That I mattered. That I can sit in the same seat as his wife's. That changed my life. That I get to tell our kids every day that they matter. They are. He will use words like, Peter, you're chosen. I thought I was garbage. I throw away. But I said, you are chosen for us. You didn't come here by mistake. You are chosen. So are our kids in the foster care too. Chosen. He would say, you are a gift to us. Wait, I'm a gift to you? I thought I was a burden to you. But he would say, you are a gift that you really taught us how to love unconditionally. Our kids are a gift to us. He would say, Peter, you're brave for living on the streets for 5 years and go through what you went through. I didn't see that as a brave. I thought that was survival. But those words helped me that I get to tell my kids as well. You're brave for truly living without your mom and dad. Your heart, your sin. That's all I'm about for kids in foster care. And advocating for their parents as well. That my kids can go back to mom. When mom can get better to get their kids. Men on the streets, they would see me and say, I would hear them say, what a mother would let their kids be on the streets. But no one knew what my mom went through. The same are foster kids sometimes. It's easy to judge their parents without knowing how. How did their kids get there? If your mom was in the foster care and you get a baby at 16 with the same pimps that came in your home, who told you how to be a good mom? Nobody. And if I can come alongside as a resource, it's a joy. I have extended families. Every Christmas, you have no idea. Extended families. Why? Because we embrace their families. So the kids go back and we stay in their lives. And for me, I'm here to share with you about beyond Uganda. The one day, I can't promise they will all be Peter. But who knows how far they will go by just being faithful. To give them a little glimpse of hope. Our little girls and daughters and sons. They can have a place to go fetch water. They don't have to walk miles and miles away. My brother I follow, died at the age of 11. Why? Because he went to fetch water. And he had epilepsy and he fell in a pool of water. And it went in his brain because it was all contaminated. He died a few hours later. So for me, water is key. It's important to our kids that you as a church, somewhere in Chachtaw, could provide wells for kids. It is a joy and it is a privilege for us to have a glimpse of hope. When they told me how much you're giving, I said, there must be like 5,000 people there. But I was amazed or your kindness of how you give and how you protect has changed the lives of grandmoms, that they can see their daughters go fetch water and come back because they don't have to go too far. They have seen go to school because they matter, because someone in Chashtal decided to say, we want to embrace their kids. My foster family, they always say, I wish we did more. And I'm like, how much more would you do? You did enough and God has used it in ways that we had to trust. Today, I have 20 kids from beyond Uganda with me. On this Christmas, they are looking for someone to sponsor them. Today, if you could take those 20, give them a glimpse of hope, that would mean so much. I've also written a book. It just came out like 40 days ago. Now I'm known. He made me known. A kid that didn't have a name, he made me known. That is my job, to make others known. But also, as I said, Genesis 50:20, for what you meant for evil, God used it for good to save lives. I'm trying. Oh, I wrote a book to my kids. This part of where we come from, we can use our past to have the best future. That our past should not really hold back or take away our future, but rather use it as a foundation to do better for others and for ourselves. Now I am known. How to make others known. How I be the odds, and somehow how God has used this to change lives. To me, I'm home. This is my home. I love Oklahoma so much that no matter where I go, I'll always be part of you. Because of my child and the last 12 kids that I've had, they are all from Oklahoma. Through the kindness of a stranger. I didn't have a pair of shoes until when I was 16. Never had a pair of shoes ever. 16, he gave me one pair of shoes. I hated it so bad. Because I had to wear that at school. I had grown my life, never had a pair of shoes. But that changed my life in some way, that he believed me, the little boy who was a thief, trying to steal from him, should have an opportunity to go to school. And that's also how I became a believer, because I saw what he had and I said, I want to have that. He didn't tell me, Peter, you need to know Christ as your Lord and Savior. No, he lived it. Some people ask me, do you find it really difficult to understand God as your father? I'm like, no, because he demonstrated what our father ought to be. So for me, it was easy to understand God as my father, that he would love me because a stranger has loved me that way. And it's been a joy to truly be a dad to kids from hard places. As I said, I want to foster as many as I can, if they allow me. And in a bigger house, you know, so if I can find one, you know, and a minivan, to have our kids. This is part of the challenges, the abuse we get to get. I've been called on 8 times by calls the police. There's a strange man with kids. But that man who raised me has really helped me to know how to respond to that. That my kids love me. That we are family no matter how we look. That we are family. And it's truly been a joy to be a part of that. By the kindness of one stranger, change that for me. And that's why I'm here to share with you. For what you're doing for Beyond Uganda. You're not just sending water there. You're not just sponsoring kids there. You're changing a life. You're giving hope to the grandma. Giving hope to the mom. Giving hope to a dad who always thought girls. But saying, no, no, no. To God's eyes, they are special. They are loved. And you're changing the attitude and breaking the cycle of poverty and how men treat women. And it's truly been a joy. So on behalf of kids and Beyond Uganda, I want to say thank you for helping us. Thank you for believing in us. And thank you for truly saying that we matter. Like that man said, there were more than 1,000 or 2,000 kids in the streets of Kampala. But he didn't look the other way. He didn't say, there are too many, I cannot do it. He said, what I cannot do for all, I will do it for one. And that one happened to be me. Today, I got 20 of them. If you sponsor one, I will give you a free book. I have free books as well. But on behalf of Uganda. We want to say thank you and thank you for loving on us. Blessings.